jotted some very essentials down too that I might look at.
Great. Well, today is Tuesday, July 22nd. My name is Lauren Bendit, and I'm here with Marguerite Sykes. And she's going to tell us about her experiences at the Forest Products Lab. I guess to start us off, if you don't mind telling us a bit about your background and so what made you interested in forest products and how you ended up here.
Okay. Well, I have always been interested in chemistry. I think it was prompted by my high school physics teacher, actually, who kind of said I should look into science more seriously, and I really did like it. So I went to Denison University in Ohio, Granville, Ohio, and got a bachelor's degree in chemistry. And the first year I was married, and soon after I graduated, I guess there was a one-year interval, my husband and I both taught in small town New York State. I taught all of the sciences in their high school, which was quite a challenge. I was usually a couple lessons ahead of the kids in advanced physics, but I really enjoyed the chemistry and the labs in this. And then when we moved to Madison, we had two children at that time, and I went to work for Hector DeLuca in the biochem department on campus, and that was part-time because our children were young. And I really enjoyed that lab work until I got very allergic to the rats that we had to deal with. But it was an exciting time too, because it was when they discovered the active metabolite for vitamin D, which now has hope for osteoporosis and lots of other things. So that was a very exciting time. After my, I guess I was there almost 7 years, 6.5 years or so, I tried to get into the Forest Products Lab because it was had always been very exciting to me to look into this place, but they didn't have any openings, so I went over to the VA hospital and worked there for about a year and a half or two. And when I wanted to scale down to part-time work, just because of our children, we had three at that time, they weren't interested in somebody part-time, so I came over to Forest Products, and I did get a job here, and that was in 1971 is when I started. So I guess that's the background I have had.
You said that you were always really excited about the Forest Products Lab, or you found it interesting?
Yeah. Well, I guess the out-of-doors and trees and forests and all of this. I was also taking some guide training at the UW Arboretum, and it was kind of a toss-up. Do I try to make a profession out of that or work in the laboratory, which I dearly loved? I think it was the lab work part of chemistry that I really liked. So this seemed to be more year-round and permanent, so this is the choice I made. So I was delighted to get in. I guess I had always heard really good things about the lab and the type of work they were doing.
Great. So I take it you had heard about the Forest Products Lab before you came here.
Yes.
Do you remember when you first heard about it?
I don't. I guess there was a graduate student who was in the chemistry department who we got to know very well, and he had visited here at the lab when they gave daily tours, and came back very excited about it, and kind of said, yeah, that's kind of a feeling that I've had without having seen it. And then we did take a tour, and it was confirmed. It was a lot of exciting things going on.
I guess, was there anything in particular going on at that time here that you found?
Well, let's see.
Exciting.
Well, I guess the botany area, having the cultures of all the fungi and I guess the micro work, the electron microscope, those kinds of things is what I remember best. Impressed by the pilot plant, which was huge. Mm-hmm.
So generally your impressions of the lab were pretty good place.
Yeah, very positive, yes. So I was delighted to get a chance to work here.
And same with your impressions of the Forest Service and the university as well, or did you connect those with the lab at all?
I did not connect the university with the lab, but I guess I didn't know that much about the Forest Service, and I guess I think of the National Forest and this sort of thing, so there was nothing at all negative about it. Right. Neutral to positive, yes.
Right. So you started working at the lab in 1971,
mm-hmm.
and do you have any memories of your first day, or?
I guess I do have one just because of the weather. I started in January and it was, just a really frigid day. We live about a mile from here and, well, for, I don't know, about 20 years, I walked back and forth to the lab. It was very snowy and probably close to zero. And I mean, I was absolutely frozen when I got here. So that's the most vivid memory. And I started working with Dan Caulfield, and he was the world's best first boss here at the lab. He was just extremely nice and made everything very, very easy. Mm-hmm. So it was a very positive time.
Great. And could you describe a typical day? What did you do here? And
okay.
Or did you have a typical day?
I guess that's the better question. I think I had basically two lives here. I had about, I don't know, 12 years or so, or 15 years of part-time work.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just that maybe was more routine. I did basic testing, you know, everything from working with Dan, it was x-ray fluorescence, making little pellets and putting them through the x-ray. And one interesting project there was when they were restoring the U.S. Constitution, they did some samples on that. And the second life that I had here was when I worked full-time and really got into some exciting projects, and that was every day was very, very different, and that was what made it exciting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Went from the routine to the many things happening at once.
Was that still in the same area or division?
I stayed in the same unit, but its name changed many, many times, but basically it was the pulp and paper division, and I guess I still think back at it as being the pulp and paper division.
Yeah. And I guess, do you have any particular projects that you worked on that you found really exciting? Or
I think everything I worked on the last 15 years were extraordinarily exciting, and I think they were kind of breakthrough topics, like more environmentally inclined. It was to replace the chemicals for pulping and bleaching and recycling with more environmentally sound methods, like enzymes or hydrogen peroxide for bleaching. And so everything was new, and although some people had been doing it, none of these techniques were being used commercially, so it was just kind of the groundwork on some of these things that made it very exciting. And I would take journals home, and I did a lot of work at home just because I was so enthusiastic about what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Fiber loading was another project that I worked on, and that too was innovative, and we part of the team that got a patent on that work that we did. I think that was the start of working on teams, and the whole thing was more interdisciplinary, which was a nice experience that I hadn't had before. I worked on from the beginning of biopulping, for instance, and that was a very exciting time working with both the economists and the engineers and the biochemists, and obviously all had to translate to the application and the wood chips and the screening of the fungi. So that was very exciting, and I think that was maybe a real opportunity when I guess Kent Kirk and John Koning invited me to join the team, and at different times I did many different things for that group, and that was probably exponential learning for me, and that was very, very nice. And the same thing with the bleach work. Actually, that's what prompted the bleach work. The biopulping project darkened the wood chips, and so they had to be bleached. And so that's when I learned how to bleach wood pulp. And we wanted to do it to preserve the lignin and do it environmentally sound. So that's where hydrogen peroxide primarily came in.
Wow. And it sounds like a whole array of...
Yeah, definitely.
And what time period generally was this?
This was in the 80s, late 80s, mid to late 80s, and going all through the 90s. And at about that same time, recycling became big, just because landfills were being filled so rapidly, the amount of paper that everybody used was much too much, and I just felt, well, you know, since it was too expensive to throw away pulp and to throw away paper, which could definitely be reused, and recycling obviously was the best way to do this, and the techniques that they were using when it was recycled tossed in so many chemicals that again were very harmful to the waters that, you know, came out of the mill, and it was kind of defeating some of the environmental impact by doing this, as why we started using enzymes for de-inking. And that too was an innovative idea. Tom Jeffries and Kent again was the one who introduced his pet Fanrachidae chrysosporium. You've probably heard that many times in looking. That was what they started with. And then screened many other fungi to see which was the best. I digress. This was really back from biopulping, but also this was the same contact that I used that we started some enzymatic work for de-inking. Mistake. Sorry.
No, that's fine. I guess conversely, did you encounter any projects that you found particularly challenging?
They all were. Yeah. Just because we really didn't know what would work. And I guess the bleaching probably was pretty straightforward, and yet it was a little different. In the fiber loading, I did some bleach work with that too, and the fiber loading process, the calcium carbonate that's formed in situ, which is a paper-making product to smooth out the paper, it's a filler of sorts, is highly alkaline, and so when they tried this on lignin-containing papers, it would darken it, and so they had to be bleached, and so this was another need for bleaching. But as I say, everything was kind of trial and error what we were working on.
Yeah. So then did you spend most of your days in the lab just working on different tests then, or how did...
Sure. That's when I went into the pilot plant a lot, and I spent a lot of time out in the pilot plant for all of these things, but a lot of things were small scale first, and then had to be scaled up. The biopulping was the first thing that took me into the pilot plant, because the wood chips then had to be refined, and I was running a disc refiner for a short time. And and some of the bleaching work too, we always scaled up to a batch that was big enough to, you know, not more than 10, you know, we started with 10 grams in the lab, but you had to test it on something larger, and so always everything had to eventually be scaled up, so it went from that to the pilot plant. Mm-hmm. And part of it too was making hand sheets. You probably see them, the test lab where you slurry the pulp, and there's a special instrument of sheet mold that make a hand sheet, and all of the tests are brightness, how white it is, how strong it is, how easy it tears. Go back to the basic hand sheet, and so we did a lot of those too. So it was a big variety of things that we did, and as I say, every day was different, and many things were being done simultaneously. So one day I worked part-time on fiber loading, and another part of the day on bleaching for the biopulping. Mm-hmm. So a lot of variety.
Yeah. I guess, did you work on any publications around this too? Mm-hmm.
Yes. I guess this was a wonderful opportunity once I joined all these teams. It was the de-inking team, the fiber loading team, and the recycling. I guess we weren't legally a team, but we worked together with a lot of disciplines there too. We had the opportunity then to write papers and give presentations at conferences, and so it opened up the world of not just staying here in the laboratory.
Yeah. So did your job then take you away from here?
For conferences, yes, and there were quite a few that I was able to go to, usually to make a presentation, but not always. Also, we had a lot of opportunities for training here at the lab. We went from, this is one thing that was very dramatically different. At one point in my early years here, the computer meant key punch. Mm-hmm. And then the cards were read on campus for the computer system they had there. And then we got to the point of everybody doing their own typing and eventually had their own computer. And we had very good training courses to teach you how to use a computer, for which I am very thankful now, because I still use it a lot. And so many people my age don't know how to operate a computer, or very happily anyway. Yeah, this was a real plus.
Mm-hmm. So what sort of places did you end up traveling to, and what were the conferences that you went to?
They all were really pulp and paper kinds of, I guess one was environmental, but they were all sponsored by TAPI, the Technical Association for Pulp and Paper Industry. And we had them different places, different years. So it was Atlanta several times, New Orleans, San Diego, Boston. I guess I had a course at North Carolina State, and went to Canada one time for a presentation. Those are the ones I can remember right now, Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have the opportunity to, maybe work with scientists from other Forest Service research stations or from industry, or do some cooperative research?
We did with Voith for the fiber loading especially, and we did that. They had an industrial or semi-industrial size pilot plant there. So after we did some basic work here at the lab, we went up there to their scale up, and that was very interesting. Oh, also, that's where we took our enzymatic de-inking, which was very exciting time, because to do it big time there was very nice, and they had a very successful run for the first time, and then presenting that paper on it was very fun. So that was good.
Was there the one project that you work on that gave you the most personal satisfaction in the end, or did you enjoy all of them equally?
Hmm. That's a tough question because for different reasons, different things stand out. Perhaps the biopulping, maybe because it was my first big opportunity here at the lab, I think. And I guess this maybe goes back to maybe the status of women. And there had only been one other woman who worked in the pilot plant before I started there. And now, of course, there are many. I think there are many. I guess I haven't been back there to look. But I think when I was asked if I would be willing to work in the pilot plant, I think they expected the answer to be no. And when I said yes, I guess that was a surprise as well as an opportunity for me. I think I would not have had the experiences I had if that had not been opened. There weren't very many women scientists here at the lab, and I was a technician, and a lot of it was kind of a struggle to publish, because you couldn't publish unless you were a scientist. And I think there were different criteria used at different times for what was expected of me versus, and I'm sure all many other women here at the lab. Mm-hmm. But I did finally get to be a scientist, which was very exciting. Not too long before I retired, actually, but it was a long battle. And and I think maybe I hopefully made it a little easier for some other women coming along, because I think a lot of men who had been here for a very long time had definitely the feeling women's place, you couldn't take women seriously. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's it. So, anyway, you may not like to include that, but it was, I think, accurate.
I guess, did you see, did you really get to see the status of women change here? Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I think part of this was legislation, civil rights legislation, and also we had a very gutsy young chemical engineer, two of them actually, one Marcia Patton Mallory, who now is, I think, director or certainly a high office in the Forest Service in Colorado, the last I heard anyway. And the other was Teresa Young, who worked in our unit, and she was the first one who went out into the pilot plant. And those people, plus the legislation, plus Forest Service had a class action suit against them in California, women not getting promoted and having a lot of harassment. And I think it made the Forest Service across the board more amenable to change.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what year that was?
I suppose it was in the... Oh, dear, it's hard to remember. 70s, maybe? Before it hit here. Mm-hmm. I think we were always kind of behind the time. I remember very dramatically there was a meeting here at the lab, and for the first time anybody who wanted to attend could, instead of just the scientists. And one of the speakers from the lab made a very sexist comment, and then there was a very sexist joke a little later in the meeting, and somebody from another company who was also here made the comment, and we went out to lunch, a bunch of us. He didn't think this kind of feeling was alive and well in the current day and age. And I think some of the young women who attended felt very, very offended by this. I guess it wasn't that new to those of us who had been around, but that definitely has changed before.
And when was that? Was that in the 70s as well?
Or? Well, let's see. That was probably later, probably in the 80s that happened.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sort of assume with it being part of the government that it should change with...
But I think at that time, you know, all the project leaders and division heads and whatever were male. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's easy to protect your own turf.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe not what you brought me in to talk about, but it was part of my life here, and I think I could have been much more productive sooner, let's put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up, I think, having my name on, I don't know, 80-some publications in those last 10 years or 15 years maximum. And there were a lot of years before then that I could have been used more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, maybe to move on a little bit. How did you feel working for an agency that was part of the Forest Service or part of the federal government?
Yeah, I was very neutral about that, I think, until I think the issue of the environmentalists against the Forest Service when the spotted owl issue came up, and then cutting some virgin forests in Alaska initially and other places certainly gave the Forest Service a black eye.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a little embarrassing to be part of that organization. But I think, I don't know, the different administrations deal with some of these problems differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on who's in charge, yeah.
Were you more attuned to the different administrations because you worked here, or?
I think so. Primarily, it made a difference in the funding that the lab got, and that was, I think, a direct influence of administration and leadership in the country.
Mm-hmm. You've already sort of touched on changes in perceptions of the Forest Service over your time here. I suppose, do you have any more to say about that, or I'll maybe expand it a little bit to up until the time you retired?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you just spoke about the spotted owl and the cutting the forest.
Was
in Alaska.
It Tongass Forest, maybe?
Did you see perceptions of the Forest Service change for other people?
Yes, I think it was certainly, I think the average person maybe didn't care one way or another, and a lot of them poo-pooed the whole thing. But I think it did change the image of the Smoky Bear and the, the good things the forest had to offer. But I don't know, everybody wants something different from the National Forest. It isn't a very clear-cut issue, actually, so I can sympathize with the clear-cutters and the many other problems that there. So, I don't know, I haven't thought that much about it, but I know the image has changed.
Yeah. I guess my next question was going to be, do you see it changing currently, or?
I'm not watching it that carefully, but I guess the one thing that did hit Wisconsin in last week's State Journal, I mean, the big issue was the closing of some more paper mills, and it had gone from a time that they were on top of the world, I think, to it's just so sad to see with all those jobs lost and having to close down, but I guess this was built-in obsolescence of their equipment, and it just would be so expensive to change. That was one thing. And secondly, the cheaper pulp that they're growing on plantations in Brazil, Australia, the Far East. So it's that's not an easy problem, and certainly with environmental constraints which should be there and have been very lax in being enforced in the mills, I guess it was inevitable that they'd collapse.
I guess completely different. While you were working here, did you feel any connection to the university while working here, having worked in the lab there previously?
Well, we took a forestry course. I did that on my own. There was a forest chemistry of wood that several of us from the lab walked over there to campus to take a class. But occasionally we had something to do with the forestry department. The most direct link with the university was some of the graduate students who did some of their research here. And that was always fun to hear their projects and to work with them. I think there maybe was only one that I can remember in our unit, but I think the other thing was international researchers who were here that I think added an awful lot to the whole climate here of the lab. Mm-hmm. And summer students, of course, they were often university students, and even some high school minorities were given summer jobs that were paid for, like by other institutions, like Centro Hispano, and those, to give these kids a chance. And we had just a marvelous young Hispanic woman one summer who I think did college age work with me. It was just super.
So you mentioned taking at least one class at the university. Did you take more than one, or pursue any graduate classes?
I didn't. I guess that was the other thing. We were always encouraged to take engineering courses and get a degree, advanced degree in engineering, and that was kind of a low priority in my life. Had it been something else, they were pushing, I think I would have been much more amenable, but I guess when I could have had, you know, the opportunity to spend some time on my own, I got so involved with the research I was doing here that I spent my free time doing that or learning. I guess it was a lot of on-the-job learning that I was doing, and it was informal, but we had a lot of good people here who shared their expertise very, very nicely.
So are there colleagues about whom you have particularly strong memories? And do you have any stories about them?
Okay. Well, this is probably the nicest one is almost from day one. There was a coffee group that met down in the ground floor of where my office was initially in the building 33. And there were probably 10 people, maybe 12, and at any one day, probably 8 of them I'd see twice a day. We'd just come together for coffee, and often it became a real problem solving, you know, kind of what do you do about if this happens? And, you know, you also get to not only solve problems about what you're researching on, but I guess we got to know each other's families and this sort of thing, just vicariously talking. And, you know, some of these men, and I guess I have to say I was one of the few women in the group. We had a secretary at one time, and Suki Krohn was another woman who came over. But the rest were all men, and it just was a very cordial group, and I think that was maybe one of the nicest memories I have at the lab. And I guess I still see Ed Springer occasionally, informally, in a university league setting. And Dan Qualfield has remained a really good friend. Not that we see each other often, but we run into each other occasionally. Yeah, some of the people are no longer living who were in that group, and young people came in who still are here. So it was a very interesting group, and I guess I have the strongest memories of them.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, were you involved in any other sort of social activities associated with the lab?
Not very much at all. Mm-hmm. I think it was a group called the Forestettes, and I felt I really didn't have that much in common with them, but I went occasionally, not very often. And I did, I guess occasionally the lab had picnics and I would go occasionally to that. But no, I didn't. I wasn't a socialite. And I guess maybe I'm more reserved person, and so I don't seek out those kind of activities. Mm-hmm. Other people from the lab, though, who were meaningful, I think we had such wonderful support from editing, the women there, and from photography and from statistics, and it just were key people all across the lab who I think about very often because they just were so super to support what you were doing. Mm-hmm. And that was very nice. One thing I had jotted down about some little story about the lab. At one time, and this was in the recycling period, and so I guess we're talking about the late 80s, early 90s, early 90s maybe. The pilot plant did some contract work. I didn't call it contract work. It was something like that. But you tried to solve industry-specific problems, and so industry would come with some product that they were trying to evaluate on a pilot plant scale. And this was, this specific event was first weekend, I think it was in December. And there was, it turned out to be a blizzard. But I knew because of the storm that was coming, not very many people would make it into the lab. I knew these people had come from New York. It was a very simple thing for me to walk in. And there probably were five people out in the pilot plant to staff, the group coming. And when the guys came here from the visiting group, it's like, what is this? Oh, the lab was closed because of the bad weather, and the university closed down that time too. And he said, what are these wimps in this town? They're closing everything down just because of a little snow. Well, this was 7 o'clock in the morning, and by noon when we all were going to go out to lunch, we couldn't get the cars out of the parking lot. And we decided to walk just down a little ways on University Avenue. It took forever to plod through the snow and the wind blowing. And we got to a restaurant, which was 2 blocks away. Their help hadn't come in, their supplies hadn't come in. We ended up with having a bowl of soup, essentially served by the same person, and it was kind of wild. But we got the project done, and I don't know how long it took to get those guys out of town again. But that was one fun event that I kind of remember.
You have your notes in front of you.
I'll try to remember. Well, just a very kind of funny one. We had an electron microscopist, Irv Sachs was his name. And he was always trying to lose weight. I mean, who isn't? But he was especially always trying to lose weight. And Dan Caulfield had a lead vest that he used for the X-ray room. And so Dan said one day to Irv, let's go on this diet together. And we'll have a weigh-in at the beginning, a weigh-in in, I don't know, 3 weeks later. So Dan put on this lead shield on himself with a sweater over it, and he didn't know he had the lead shield on. And so both of them weighed, and they wrote down the amount. And every day at coffee, these are two of the coffee group guys, Dan would eat all this junk food, stuffing it in. And Irv was so good, he said, wow, you're not gonna lose any weight. And then at the end of the time, Dan took off his shield when they did the reweighing, and Dan had lost something like 12 pounds or something like this, and Irv had maybe even gained a little, and he said, you know, life was just not fair. And then we finally told him, and that was a really funny event for everybody involved. There's a zillion things, but maybe those were the two standout ones that I can recall. I think a lot of people here have a very nice sense of humor, and so it was used to its fullest.
Yes. Well, then maybe we'll move on to, I guess, why you decided to retire. Was it just time, or?
Well, I guess so. My husband had retired, I don't know, 5 years before me, and was always saying, oh, you should retire, you should retire. You know, his life hadn't changed, really. He did a lot of traveling, and he still had his work. So I had a pretty serious back problem. And when I couldn't, I started to get to the point where I couldn't stand all day anymore and work. And I definitely was a hands-on researcher. And I said, you know, this isn't really fair to, I can't do anything if I can't do the research. Mm-hmm. And I was 66, and so I thought, well, toss in the sponge. But I have to say, it was the hardest thing I have ever done. It took a couple of years to not feel lost, I think, to readjust to not working. Mm-hmm. So I had worked all my life. So I guess it was a combination of things, yeah.
And what year did you retire?
2002. January, so.
Yeah. And do you feel like your work left a mark on the lab or on the Forest Service? Or
well, you'd like to hope so. I guess I hope I maybe served a little bit of a role model for some of the women who were always encouraging them to go back to school, to keep going at it. And maybe to keep trying, even though things look like they're against you. As far as the research, I sure hope all these things are put to use someday. Mm-hmm. I think if...
Are any of them being used now?
Well, I think our patent on fiber loading has been licensed, and hopefully it will fly, but that maybe has the most possibility. Enzymatic deinking has been used in other countries, but you know, here I mentioned the problem of converting your lab, and everything is geared to a lot of things were geared to delignification, the sulfite, you know, to get the Kraft kind of pulp, and I guess it's a whole different process that the biopulping was driving at. But it should, you know, you get much more pulp from maintaining the lignin and whatever. And I don't know about recycling, if that'll ever make it. But again, I think other countries are doing it, and they're not so specific about, not so picky about having to have the whitest of the white everything. And so, you know, it should go to. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think they're all good things.
Yeah. Are Are there things that you wish you could have done while you were here that you didn't get to do?
Mm-hmm. Good question. Sure, I guess I wish I would have gone back to school a lot earlier than I was encouraged to, and not to be an engineer, but to do something else. Maybe botany, I don't know. I guess I really liked it when I could research and write and present. So I guess I wish that would have happened sooner. But I don't have real regrets, really, at all.
That's great.
Yeah.
And I asked them, did your career meet your expectations?
I think so, yeah. I never thought I would be working that long. I think everyone my age, when we graduated from college, you know, it was finding a job until you had a family and this sort of thing. And then it became necessary to work. And then it became really fun to work. So I guess that was the evolution. One comment about retirement. I still dream about people from the lab. And it was every day for a couple of years. And now it still is. And not even the people necessarily that I was the closest to here at the lab. But, you know, just for some reason, I don't know why I think about them, and they would be in my dream. So it's something that sticks with you when you're at a place. I guess it was 30-some years I worked here, so
yeah,
long time.
Well, I think I'm at about the end of my questions. If you have anything else that you'd like to record?
No, I think not. This is good.
Great.
Well, it's
so we were
sexism.
Just talking about red tape and
okay,
the forms.
Yeah, that's that was one of the really bad things about working here was, you know, just getting around the red tape of everything, and then when they had to start contracting out for things, and you had to go through their travel agency, which was sitting in most cases in India, so you'd call and say you're in Madison, Wisconsin. Where is that would be the answer. What is it near? And then you want to go to where and what part of the country is this? I mean, it took so much time, and usually the cost that came through was a lot more than you could get if you went locally and somebody who could, you know, give you comparative prices. So that was part of it. Let's see, what else are they going to, what started me on this? The red tape and the, we had safety training. We had all these required things.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a film that was given by, I don't know, some fireman from someplace else. And in it, you know, everything had this woman in a bikini, you know, showing this is the fire extinguisher, and this is it, you know, just all through it. And some young woman who was in editing at that time said at the end, she said, I don't mean to be rude, but she said, I find that extremely offensive. And even the women in the room just booed at her and said, you know, oh, you know, why did you have the nerve to get up and embarrass the whole lab by saying that? And I mean, she was 100% right in saying this. And she did not last very long here, and I don't know if that was the motive for it, but I mean, it wasn't even permitted to talk about. I guess that's it. Funny things that happened at the lab, and this Teresa Young, who I talked about, she was a very bright young woman, and all the men in the pilot plant had pinup pictures in their lockers, or many of them did, and many, many things that she was faced with. And I'm sure because she was the first woman there, they gave her a lot more grief than anybody else would have given. Well, she was very effective in getting them removed, and she was also very effective in all the engineering journals and writing letters to the editors saying that, you know, this day and age. I mean, this was in the 80s too, mm-hmm. and it still was alive and well. When women from our, and mostly the secretaries, because they were the only ones who dressed up, the rest of us were slouches, but walked past the shops, which was from building 33, the small building in between, the men would be lined up there sitting and watching the women go by and whistle or make, you know, comments like this. And that too is going on for quite a while, but that too is clamped down. So, I mean, there were some dramatic changes, but long after they were doing it long after anyone else, I think anywhere in the world, in this country, were doing them. So, very bizarre climate.
Yeah, definitely.
I guess that's all I have to say about that, but. Yeah.